What's up, guys? Welcome to Juice Podcast. My name is Saul Monnelly at Saul Monnelly NBA on Twitter. Here joined by Forrest Walker at Do Nots on Twitter. Forrest, how you doing?
Hey, not too bad. Better than I thought I was going to do yesterday afternoon.
Yeah. It's been a lot of fun to watch the Rockets these past few games. Like this past 10 games. Like, even the losses have been fun for me, honestly. Like just seeing the growing pains with every player and seeing the players that are thriving. So first, I do want to apologize for last week. The audio issues were pretty inexcusable on my end. I saw the audio cut out at the 23-minute mark. Like, I saw it disconnect. I plugged it back in, and it still, I don't know what happened. At the 15-minute mark, it stopped working. So I've replaced the cable. Brand new cable. Braided cable. Fancy. Hopefully it works now. Hopefully it doesn't disconnect on me. But let's pick off where we left off, because Jalen Green has been playing a lot better. We spent the entire last podcast talking about Jalen Green, talking about Ime Udoka benching him in multiple fourth quarters in a row, talking about him kind of not really coming along as quickly as many would have imagined. And he's been playing better. Forrest, first let me read his stats. Over his last...
Please.
Five or so games, he's averaging 21 points per game, 6 rebounds per game, 3 assists per game, 44% three-point shooting, and that's on 8.3 attempts, 62% true shooting. He's been pretty good in terms of efficiently scoring the basketball. Some of it's been kind of, you know, like his threes are going in, but sometimes I feel like he's not always playing the best game, right? Sometimes I still see him lose the ball too often, but the shots going in, and we did talk about a lot of this is just shots going in, right? A lot of this will correct itself when shots go in, and they're going in now. Forrest, are you encouraged? Has he done enough to get off the proverbial hot seat in terms of like his starting spot?
Well, yes. I mean, if he's making shots, you know, and those are good three-point numbers in particular, especially given that, like, and that's considering that he shot pretty badly this game yesterday against the Bucks. So, yeah, that's very encouraging, and I think that, all right, I mean, the reality is that as long as they have a reasonable case to keep him starting, they're going to do so. He's doing more than what he needs. Like, he's good. He's good. If he keeps going like this, he's good. As long as people aren't going, oh, yuck, this is terrible, then that's fine. Now, the bigger question is, not just is this good enough for him to keep a starting spot, but is this encouraging enough for us to think that he's back on track to being, like, a future all-star level player, which is, I think, really the benchmark that most people who care about him and Rockets basketball want to see from him, right? Because, you know, being a starter and being an all-star player are not the same thing. If he's starter quality, great, that's fine. But that's not what you hope to get when you draft second overall in the draft. And it's also not what people hope to get when he was drafted and in, you know, the subsequent years since then. So, do you think he's doing good enough to make us think that he's back on track for the potential of being a future all-star?
Yeah, so I think I did someone else's podcast this week, and I was asked about this, right? Like, have I wavered on Jalen Green? And I think what I said was I haven't wavered on a ceiling. The ceiling has always been the same. I've been more willing to acknowledge his floor through the stretch, right? Which on that podcast, I believe I said Jordan Clarkson, right? Like, I've never said it out loud. That's the kind of player, like, if Jalen does,
you can say it.
Yeah, like, if Jalen doesn't hit, you know, all-star level, like, Jordan Clarkson's the kind of player we're talking about as a floor range for him, right? I never acknowledged that floor range at any point in his NBA career because I always thought he was a pretty safe all-star bet, to be honest. Like, even in that 2021 draft, I thought he was safer to make an all-star team than a lot of those guys in that draft class. Like, I thought he was like just that kind of player, just works a lot of times, right? Like, even if I question the kind of impact of that kind of player, that player archetype just works a lot to make, you know, all-star games. So I thought I haven't wavered on that ceiling, but I've been more willing to acknowledge that floor. I'd also add one more prerequisite. You said, is he good enough to be an all-star level player? Like, is that still his ceiling? I'd like to add one more thing. Is he good enough to warrant to being played over his teammates? Right? Like, and we'll talk about that in a second. But, like, I mean, we talked about on last week's episode, Tari Eason potentially taking a starting spot. Right? And Tari Eason hasn't played for, like, four games. Right? With an injury.
Yeah,
he's
been hurt.
And we're still talking about players potentially taking a starting spot. Right? And Jalen's playing better. And we're still doing that. Right? Like, that's how precarious this is. That's how well the Rockets have frankly hit in the middle range of the draft. Right? They've given themselves a lot of optionality here for this rebuild. Right? We kind of know one thing, and that's Alperen Şengün. These other pieces are still up for grabs. Right? I think Jabari has solidified himself a little bit, but these other guys, you know, nobody's fortified themselves after that. And that's kind of the question I have, right? Can Jalen play well enough to fight off the onslaught coming from behind him? Right?
Yeah, I was actually thinking about that earlier today that, like, currently, all right, and right now, as of, you know, late on January 7th, 2024, it looks like of the Rockets' big draft picks, right, you have Jalen Green, Alperen Şengün, Jabari Smith Jr., Tari Eason, Cam Whitmore, Amen Thompson, right? Of those six guys. Of those six guys, Jalen is the shakiest looking, right? They all look, they're looking really good right now. And that can change a lot. Over the past, like, in this moment, in particular, Cam and Amen are looking quite nice, right? And Bari and Tari have been great. Yeah, you know, have been great as far as prospects go for a while.
I'd say Amen is a little shaky to me too, just because the shooting is just so much. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
But like 4 or 5 out of 6 is really good, mm-hmm. and potentially 6 out of 6 is incredible, right? So I want to like put that framing on everything we're saying, which is that right now this group of picks are panning out really well, and you know that can and probably that'll go up and down, right? Things always change, especially with these young guys, but right now looking really good. So being worried about Jalen Green's position is a great position for the Rockets organization to be in, because that means that they have dogs nipping at his heels. That means that they have these other guys who are making a case for actually maybe being the better prospect than him. And that's a much better problem to have than going, our guy who matters is not doing well.
Yeah, no, you're right. Like, for the organization, that's a great thing. For Jalen, not Jalen, so much.
No. Right?
No. Not so much. You maybe hope some of these picks have missed, right? But that's just the way things have landed. I want to talk about one of those guys in a minute, but, like, let's just talk about more broadly, like, you know, they took 9 first-rounders, right? And it seems like they've hit on about 5 or 6 of those, right? Like, in terms of, like, okay, these guys are real NBA players. Like, with legitimate, like,
looks like minimum 4. Yeah. Probably like, 5 or 6, yeah.
Yeah, that are going to have, like, long careers, right? I'm not even saying all-star level, but I'm saying these guys are going to have, like, legitimate careers, right? Which, you know, maybe 3 or 4 of those guys probably you can't, you know, the ones they traded away, maybe you can't say that about, right? But these 6 guys, they're going to be in the NBA for a minute. Right, so congrats, kudos to Rafael Stone and the organization. Now let's talk about the onslaught coming from behind Jalen. The guy that I want to talk a lot about today is Cam Whitmore, because Cam Whitmore, holy hell, per 36 minutes, you just looked this up, Forrest, 27.7 points per game, 7.4 rebounds per game, 2.5 steals, 63.2% true shooting. I tweeted the following last night right after watching the game. I'm going to read the tweet out right now. I'm getting very close to the point of believing Cam Whitmore is just a better prospect than Jalen Green. And that's not me saying Green isn't a good prospect. It's just me saying Cam looks more ... undeniable. That's what I tweeted. And it got 50 responses, right? Caused a lot of conversation. People felt really passionate about this one way or the other. My intention wasn't to start an argument or even say something controversial, because I feel like if you've been watching what Cam Whitmore has done in limited minutes to Rockets, like, let's add that caveat, right? Limited minutes. I think any Rockets fan who's watched Cam Whitmore this year that says they haven't had a passing thought about how good he is in relation to Jalen Green is lying. Like, even if you believe Jalen Green is better, if you're telling me you've never compared the two in your head after seeing how well Cam has played, you're lying. I don't believe you. And it's obvious that you're lying because that's where one's head naturally goes, right?
Yeah. Well, I want to note, as you did, that this is on only a few minutes a game. He's playing, what, like 11-ish or something like that? That's low minutes. So per 36 is an extrapolation to 36 minutes per game. Efficiency tends to fall off as you play more, especially because you hit, you know, endurance walls and stuff like that. So, yes, it's not just a straight shot. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. It's not just a straight shot to say that if he was starting, he'd be doing this, but scaled up. But what I'll say is that he's a rookie who hasn't played that many games, and he looks pretty good. Like, and pretty good is really good for a rookie, because the thing that people don't like to talk about is that rookies kind of suck in general. They're even really good players have rough first seasons, because making a transition to the NBA is really, really difficult, and it takes a while to figure it out. He is balling out there. He looks legitimate in the minutes he's playing, especially lately. I love it. I'm having a fantastic time, and I wish him all the best. But one of all the best things might be coming for Jalen Green's starting spot, because yikes!
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll say this. He's definitely making a case to, like, stay in the rotation when guys come back from injury. Right?
And
we're talking about Dylan Brooks is going to come back at some point. We're talking about Tari Eason's going to come back at some point. I'm thinking you might have to kick, like, a man out of the rotation. Right? Like, if it were me, I would probably just stick with Cam, because I think he's just been better, point blank. That's not a knock to Amen. I just think Cam's just been better. I mean, he's got one of the more NBA-ready bodies I've ever seen. I said this at draft time. The guy is just built like a man. Right? Like, he's just built like a man. Right? Like, and, like, he's a locomotive in transition. And he's basically a play finisher for the Rockets. He's not, like, initiating any of this stuff. He's just, like, dish to him and he'll do something. Right? He'll finish. He'll make a three. He'll go to the basket. He'll finish like a freight train. Like that's what he's doing. Right? He's not doing anything fancy. He's just making stuff. Right? And another caveat, he was never this good of a three-point shooter. And I don't buy that he's suddenly this 40-something percent three-point shooter. That's just asking for a lot. But if you're telling me he's like 37, 38 already coming into the NBA,
that's
serious. That's serious coming from behind of Jalen, right? Like that is a lot that he's going to have to fight off.
Especially because he really fits what they need right now. Like, they don't, like, the hope with Jalen was that he could be more than just a skilled two guard, right? He'd be more than just a finisher, that he could also be a creator. He could be, like, an offense unto himself. The promise of the two guard, it's what we want from every two guard. And it doesn't look likely, and more importantly, that doesn't look necessary for this team, because they have offense coming from other sources currently. And look, they do need someone to take over from Fred VanVleet eventually. There's a time limit on how long Fred VanVleet's going to be the guy orchestrating the offense. It's not forever, but it's like a few years. And so they don't need that right now. What they do need is a guy who's consistently finishing, consistently attacking, and is incredibly athletic. Like, it's not just the fact that he's breathing down Jalen Green's neck, but that, like, he's not having to be the other thing that Jalen Green was trying to be or supposed to be. What he is what they need, not what he could be is what they need.
Yeah, and I'll say this. I actually don't think Cam is in serious threat to take Jalen's starting spot now.
Right? Well, not this year, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I mean. As in, like, this year, right? Like, I think he has, like, enough organizational capital to kind of fight that off. Right. If as long as he keeps shooting the ball well, if he has another cold stretch, it's another conversation. Right. Like that might be the danger zone, so to speak. Right. Because of how well these guys are playing behind him. But Long term, there is no safety there for Jalen Green.
No. After this season, it is completely put up or shut up. I mean, there's a reality in which they make the playoffs this season. I think at this point it's not a reasonable say. I think they're most likely going to be in the play-in hunt, and if they're lucky, they might even make it to a six seed. They need a bit of luck there because there's a lot of good talent in the NBA right around them, but they could totally win a couple games and get into the playoffs. It's not outside their own possibility at all. And they're not going to win a playoff series against basically anybody. But if they make it into the playoffs and they play Cam in the playoffs and he looks cool and fun and good, like,
you're playoff going minutes. You're going. Yeah, go ahead.
That's the big danger for Jalen. If they make it into the playoffs and Jalen Green is underwhelming and Cam Whitmore is at least just whelming, that'd be a huge problem for next season, Jalen Green.
Forget the playoffs. What if we're talking the play-in tournament and Jalen's having an underwhelming first half? Is he playing that fourth quarter with the season on the line? I don't think he's messing around. No.
Doak's not messing around. Yeah, in games that matter, he's going to play who he thinks he's going to get him to the finish line. They are not trying. Like, look, player development is still very important for them, but winning is also very important for them. And I feel like, all right, the front office aside, Ime Udoka seems like a kind of guy who winning is more important than player development. Not by a ton. Like, he is developing these guys, but when the chips are on the table, right, when it's coming down to it, he is going to play whoever he thinks is going to get a win, whether that is Jeff Green or whoever. It doesn't matter. In crunch time, if you're going to get him across the finish line, that's who's going to play. So, yeah, we have seen that, like, players do have to perform to get in the final minutes of games. Even Şengün has been sat for a couple games during that period when everybody was sick, and for good reason. So, yeah, it is going to be hard for Jalen Green to keep up. Which is funny we're saying is, given that he's actually been pretty decent for the last several games.
Yeah.
But there are other factors besides, like, the bar is raising for Jalen is the real problem. Like, he's pulling out of a slump, which is fantastic. I love that. But there are forces that are going to demand him to raise his standard of play, like, every game.
No, 100%. Like, and if you see us, like, smiling and kind of, like, talking, it's not that we're like, happy that this happened to Jalen. It's that we're happy that the Rockets are in this position, right? Yeah. Like,
It's fun to watch.
Yeah, like, the Rockets are in a position where, like, they have the luxury of competition for, like, the starting shooting guard spot, right? Like, they have the luxury of, like, a legitimate, like, okay, they have their one of their core pieces set in place, and now all these other core pieces are fighting for it, and they've hit on these pieces, so there is a real competition, right? Like, that's what you wanted. That's what a good rebuild is. By the way, you mentioned that Ime is, like, more favoring towards winning versus player development. I actually think coaching that way is in favor of player development. Because if you're just, you know, playing players that aren't worthy of being on the floor, what favor are you doing them, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think this is the right way to coach any team, right? I don't think there's you should coach one way for a player development team and one way for a winning team. Coach the same way, right? I think that's how you teach guys how to adapt to the NBA. And I love that about Udoka.
Yeah, I mean, it has been a breath of fresh air to watch this team. Like, we're kind of circumlocuting around one key point, which is that they are in a very real way playing by committee, which is a lot of fun, right? They have, like, their central guy. Alperen Şengün is a central guy, but even he is kind of negotiable at this point. Even he's not so good that he's just, like, always has to be in there. They do pull him sometimes for matchups or for foul trouble and things like that. Like, no one on the team is an ironclad lock for closing out a crunch time game. They pick who's winning, they pick who's doing well, they pick who's having a good night, and that's been fun to watch because you don't 100% know what it's going to look like each time down the line, and it is fun to see them have these, like, multiple lines of attack. They have a bunch of pretty good guys, any one of whom can be the right fit for a particular evening. So it's, I don't know, before a few years ago, we watched so much, like, playoff high-level basketball team Rockets that they didn't have that kind of depth, right? When you're at that, when you're, like, the Harden era contending type team, you don't have, you know, they don't usually have this luxury because all their salary is going into a few guys. So they have to play their game and make you play their game. So it's a very interesting and fun change now to see them having this, like, two 10 deep team who can roll out all kinds of different lineups and stuff. So more it's fun to see Udoka get creative with it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I like it, too. It's refreshing. Although I will say I can't wait till the Rockets get back to the point where they have a top two or three that's good enough to where, you know, we're talking about a team that's, you know, that deep in the playoffs again, right? I don't care about that, right? Like, long term, like, great, it's fine to have this right now, yeah. But, like, the Rockets can't afford all these guys, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. No. Like, they're going to have to make some – yeah, the Rockets are going to have to make some tough calls, and the depth's going to be whittled down to whoever you decide your top guys are going to be, which we'll talk about that in a second. But when you get to that point, your depth is going to be like three guys off the bench in the come playoff time, right? And so you're really talking about kind of making these decisions right now, right? Like, who's going to be better than who right now? Figuring out where you want to allocate your finances right now. This data is important, and that's why I like the way Ime's coaching, because he's helping the Rockets figure out what players are worth playing in these late game situations, right? And the players you consistently see close games right now is Alperen Şengün, Jabari Smith, Fred VanVleet, but that's not a long term player for the Rockets. Dylan Brooks, I think, might be a long term player, and that's pretty much it. Right, there's not really a fifth guy that you see consistently closing. That guy kind of changes night to night, and I like that because that means there's a spot that's up for grabs.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that salary issue too, because I was actually thinking this earlier today that if all six of these guys who we've been talking about do actually pan out as rotation level players or better. Right, some of them are obviously better than that. Where do they each land? We still have yet to see, but it seems quite possible, if not likely, that all six of them will at least be a rotation caliber player. And if that happens, if they're all like starting caliber, you have a good problem, but a big problem, because you do have to pay them at some point, and you can't pay all of them, especially not with Fred and Dylan there.
Right. It's like the reverse of Sam Presti, right? Like, Sam Presti's gonna have this problem, so he's having to make these calls before the picks come in, right? Like, mm-hmm. The Rockets have drafted all these picks already, right? So they have to make these trades now, right? Or these decisions now, right? And so there's a way to maneuver this where you can keep the war chest stacked, right? Like, not stacked, but, like, you know, filled.
Sufficient.
Right? Yeah, sufficient. Yes, you're right. That's a good word. There's a way to do this where you can keep the war chest sufficient and the core guys, you know, happy. But it's very delicate, and you have to make the right calls. You have to make the right calls. Mm-hmm. Because if you fuck up, you could have a James Harden situation, and you don't want a James Harden situation, right? And when I say James Harden situation, I mean James Harden in Oklahoma City in 2011 situation. You don't want that. You don't want to trade away the wrong guy, right? So you got to really analyze this data right now.
Yeah, and I don't think that, you know, they don't, obviously none of this is going to happen this season. This season is all just like, this is all data gathering gravy. This is great. We're having a good time. Like, there's almost no way that this can go in a way that is bad this season. Right? Like the worst thing that could happen is that guys get hurt. And even then, it sucks. But, they still are not on, like, they're not on the clock yet. But they're about to be on the clock. They're going to have to start making hard calls probably as early as next trade deadline, to decide who's going to be around long term, who do they want to pay, and who do they want to convert into future draft assets, which is the way that you keep that stuff rolling, right? You have to keep, like, it's kind of like soccer, where, like, you sell high on guys so that you can get, like, non-paid assets, and you can keep kind of rolling that over. I mean, you see it with, like, long-standing contending teams do this, where they'll draft guys, they get draft assets, they draft guys not at the top of the draft, but guys who can be pretty good. They try to develop the guys who can be pretty good into role players, and anybody who gets too good, then they have to, like, decide who, you know, who's going to move to where, etc. Exactly. It's going to be an ongoing, ongoing process, and they're going to have to move some guys. Like, they simply do not have enough minutes, and they do not have enough salary for all the guys here, should they all continue on the trajectories that look like they're going to continue on. And that includes, you know, Jalen, like, a couple of these guys, like you said, like Amen or Jalen or whoever it might end up being, just being, like, kind of okay, right? Even in the case that a couple of them are just, like, kind of okay, and then a couple more of them are, like, solid starters, and a couple more of them, like, are, like, you know, all-star level players, which is, I think, kind of the trajectory we're looking at. Even in that case, that's a lot of money. And so you have to pick who's going away. So don't get attached to all these guys. So some of them are leaving. And you still have to leave room for, like, the Jeff Screen of the world. Anyway.
Exactly. Right. You got to keep your mid-level exception open. Like, I think the Rockets will actually use their mid-level exception this summer. Right. I think they're shaping up to use that. And maybe we'll talk about that. We'll see. So I want to talk about one player today that has clearly solidified himself, right? And we didn't talk about him last week, but we sure as hell are going to talk about him this week, because over the last 10 games, Alperen Şengün is averaging 25 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, 1.5 steals, half a block, 63% true shooting. He is... So
that's some big of these, boy numbers.
Some of these games, like, he's getting like 25 points at halftime, right? Like, and like that's, he's been ridiculous, right? I have a couple questions here. I think I'm going to start with a very basic one, and then we'll move into the more fun one, right? Is he going to make an All-Star game this year for us? Like, is it going to happen this year? Like,
no,
no.
I mean, I've said as much on Twitter that, like, no, there is no scenario in which he makes the All-Star team this year.
He has a lot of buzz, though, right? Like, he has a lot of media buzz, too, which is not common for Rockets players, right? Like, he is a media darling right now, right?
Oh, he's well-liked, to be right. Sure. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And that matters, because that's 25% of the vote. Half of it's fan vote, and he's doing pretty well in the fan vote. Like, the word is out on this dude, right?
It's true. He's gaining some notoriety. He's not gonna get voted into a starter 100%. 100% chance, I'm sorry to say. Like, okay. there's too many stars in the league, and in the West in particular. So he's not there for that. But the fact that he did get 300,000 votes on the first tally, which was like what, seventh, I think, in the West for front court, pretty good. Pretty good. But then it's going to come down... The reserves is going to come down to, like, largely coaches, right? You have the coach, media, and fan votes determined. It used to just be the coaches, but now it's this weird, like, melange of the different things. So it's... I don't think the coaches are going to pull him because he's too young. The fans will maybe like him somewhat, but he's still seventh. You know, he's still, like, below the cut there. Media, he probably has the best shot with out of a lot of them, so... I don't know.
We still have centers in the All-Star game, right? Like, that's still a position.
I think so.
Okay. So
I mean, I know the startings are just between the front court and back court.
So this is who he has to beat. He has to beat one of these three guys, right? Nikola Jokic.
No.
He's not beating Nikola Jokic, right?
No.
Anthony Davis. He's probably not beating Anthony Davis. Domantas Sabonis. So Sabonis. Like, with the coaches, he might get that known commodity bump, right? He might get we're going to pick the guy on the fifth seed in the Western Conference, the guy who's been there already, the guy who we're more familiar with. But one could argue that Şengün has been more valuable to the Rockets than Sabonis has been to the Kings, right? Because they have De'Aaron Fox. So there's an argument there. I have a feeling they're going to lean Sabonis because of what you mentioned. Like, he's just a known commodity. Yeah.
Well, and also, and I mean, he also has to get past, like, Rudy Gobert in that.
You're right.
Well.
I completely forgot about Gobert.
And they're leading the West currently. So
yeah, he's not beating Gobert.
If there's enough injuries, like, it'd be a lot of injuries, but if there's enough injuries, kind of maybe. I just think it's just the landscape is such that he's too new. Like, I don't think there's... I mean, I think he's definitely... I'll say this. He's definitely getting in next year. He's an All-Star next year, and you can book that. But he's not an All-Star this year. And, like, if he goes, like, 30-10-10 the rest of the way until the All-Star break, even then, I think he's like not going to be able to do it. Like, I just don't think there's a way to like penetrate our sort of like general awareness this quickly. Sports world moves kind of slow. It takes a while for people to realize the, like, people figure out what's going on this year, 2 years from now, pretty much always. So
with him, it feels, he'll make different, it, but though, not now. With him, it feels different though, because he was kind of the internet darling, like very quickly in coming onto the season.
He is the advanced stat darling as well. Like, I think you're right that the media is going to be very pro Şengün when it comes to this. I just don't know if that'll be enough to like. Like you said, like who's he gonna displace? You know, like, no, he has to displace a bunch of guys is the problem.
You're 100% right. Like, he's not making it this year. Now that you've talked it out with me, I'm convinced he's probably not gonna make it. But I think he's inarguably one of the 25 most impactful players in basketball today. Like, I have a hard time arguing with anybody who thinks otherwise. Like, I just think he's just been that good this year. Like, the only reason oftentimes he doesn't get like 28 a night is because the Rockets blew out the other team or they got blown out. Right? it's not because he's not getting there. It's because he doesn't have the playing time to get there, cuz he doesn't need to play for whatever reason. Right? Like, that's the only thing holding him back from these 30-point games sometimes. And that's insane, man. He's 21 years old. Now let's get to the fun question. I have my answer here. Do you have any doubt about this guy being the best player on a championship team one day? I'm done. I'm sold. I think he will. Like, I know I'm early. I've always been early on this guy. I don't care. I think he's the guy. I think he's on track to be that guy. Because 21-year-olds don't put up these numbers unless they're on track to be that guy. Right? That's where I'm at.
I mean, I think you're right. I think the question is, like, he can definitely be the best player on a playoff team. I don't think there's any doubt about that at this point. The question is, how good of a team can he be the best player on? Like, can he evolve into a best player on a championship team, or will it be like the best player on like a second round or conference finals team? I think it's somewhere between there, and we're not going to know that yet. I mean, we want to say he's going to be like a top, you know, 10 guy or whatever, and he might be. He's on a really good trajectory, but you do got to play the games.
It's very so, hard. Yeah, it's a very
it's
high
really
bar.
Hard.
Yeah,
yeah, you got to be like a top 5 or 10 guy to get to be like, you can be the best guy on a championship team.
Like, Halliburton might not be there, right? Think about that. Tyrese Halliburton is amazing, and he might not be that good.
No, and I mean, there are some years there's only like two of those guys in the league. You know, it's really rare air, and it's not weird or bad that like any player would not be there. It's just the NBA's hard to win at. It's a tough league. You got to do a lot. You have to be a generational talent to be the kind of guy you can build a championship team around, and that's everyone's end goal, is to build a championship team. So the jury's still out on that, but he can absolutely he's. You could have him be your best player, and you will be like a first or second round team every year, at least, I feel like.
That's where I'm at. Like, right, like, even if he's not good enough to ultimately get a team to the promised land, he's good enough to bank on getting that team to the promised land, right? Like, I think, like, he's good enough to invest resources in trying to get to there, right? Like, he is – I think the Pau Gasol range is insight. Right, like that's kind of the Şengün spectrum for me. Right, like in the coming into the NBA, I thought he was going to be a starter. I think he's past that Sabonis level of All Star. Right, I think he's going to get past that point because he's already like near where Sabonis is on a production basis at 21 years old. So I think he's going to surpass that. Pau Gasol is kind of like that, you know, middle ground, and the end of that rainbow is Nikola Jokic. Right, like that's what that is. Right. I think he's in the Pau Gasol sweet spot right now, right? And he may get to the Jokic zone. We'll see. But the Pau Gasol at one point was good enough.
That's a great player to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. Do you want to know where he's at in win shares per 48, according to Basketball Reference?
I know what it is, but you can tell me. Go ahead.
He's 18th.
Yeah.
At what? 0.186, which doesn't seem like a lot compared to SGA's 0.302, but that's really good. Yeah. that's just crazy. Yeah. That's incredibly good for a third year player to and be like a top 20 by advanced metrics.
Look at SGA at age 21, right? You're gonna see something that's lower than 0.18, like because I've looked at this stuff, right, and I'm like, I know that SGA had this massive jump from like 12% or whatever to like whatever he is now,
or like 20. Was that? I don't remember.
Yeah,
when was he drafted?
Just look at
which year am I looking for?
Age 21. Age 21.
Oh boy. Okay. All right. Let me just do some clicking around. I don't remember how old everyone is. they're all children to me.
It says it on the side.
Let's have it right there.
Yeah.
Oh boy. All these numbers have changed. All right. Could you just tell me? it's gonna take me a minute to pull this up.
I'll look it up. So at age 25, at age 21, he was 12.1%. So, Şengün's above that right now, right? Now, SGA had a massive jump, right? So he was at 0.21 at like age 21, and then he suddenly went to like 0.25 or something ridiculous, right? He had some crazy offseason. So Şengün will need to make that next leap at some point. But the fact that he's starting here is incredibly positive. It's incredibly positive that he's already here. And that's why I'm just like very comfortable calling him an untouchable prospect for the Rockets. Like, unless you get bowled over by like a Giannis or like a, you know,
yeah, like some generational talent or whatever.
Right. Like, and even then I would be hesitant. I'm going to be honest. I'm going to be hesitant to do it. But like Giannis, like I think that's kind of like where I'd be like, okay, we can talk now. You got to get me a superstar of that caliber to where I'd be willing to like move the guy. He's firmly in my, I don't want to touch, I don't want to discuss trades with him, right? So that's where I'm at with Şengün. I'm kind of at the point where I'm like, okay, who's B, C, and D, right? Who am I paying after him, right? And I don't think the Rockets will pay him, to be frank. Until he hits restricted free agency, I think the Rockets are going to keep their financial flexibility, like just because they want to do kind of like what the Sixers are doing with Maxey, right? Like even though they know that Maxey is a max player, they're going to wait until restricted free agency to give them the most optionality. I kind of have a feeling they might do that. Maybe they go Max.
It's the Morey coaching or the Morey GM tree, you know. They keep max flexibility, and if anything, that's been more normalized in the league since the days of when Daryl Morey was like waiting to give people extensions. People were, you know, giving him guff about it. So,
no,
yeah, I mean, and it's in their best interest to wait as long as they can on extending and paying all these guys too, because the more time you have to figure it out, the better.
Right, and I guess my natural question is, after Şengün, who are you most comfortable paying? I think where I'm leaning right now is Jabari, right? Like that's like, okay, this is like the guy I'd be willing to like, okay, he's going to be part of my core alongside Şengün, because he fits alongside Şengün, frankly, very, very well. And he's playing extremely well right now. Like Jabari, we need to give Jabari his flowers. Jabari last year looked like a broken prospect. Jabari Smith Jr. last year looked like a broken basketball player. Confidence was shot. And I think a lot of that had to do with him falling from 1 to 3 in the draft. I think that shook him to his core. I think that extended into summer league, extended into the regular season, and he just never got it back. Right? This offseason, he shrugs it off, works his ass off on ball handling. You could see that work coming through. Works his ass off on getting contact to the rim. You see that work coming through. Play summer league through Ime Udoka's counsel, right? Because Ime Udoka convinces him to do it. Smart decision, because that confidence carries over to the preseason and the regular season. And we see the player that we have right now, who is shooting 39% on threes right now. A guy who was shooting 30% on threes last year is shooting 39%. This is close to the prospect we expected for us, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's a top three guy. He was considered at one point a top, but potentially top one guy. And yeah, I'm with you on Barry. He's impressed me a lot. Being a second year player also is, again, it's very early for him to look this savvy. Like, he really is excellent at picking up the NBA game, is the thing I want to say about this guy. Like, everything I've heard is that he's an extremely hard worker. He's clearly an extremely fast learner. He looks like he's gained like 3 years of experience out there between last year and this year. He looks like he knows what he's doing, which is really impressive. And to me, he is an excellent counterpoint to Şengün. He can play alongside your best player and do it very well in complementary, which is huge. He's a great fit there. I don't know if he has the kind of game that's going to give him a lot of all-star game selections, right? Like, even if he is all-star level talent, he might just, like, not really be much of an all-star pick because his game is so, I guess, like, there's, like, a workman-like element to it. There's a lot of him, like, cleaning up things and setting stuff up that it's not going to go appreciated. But if you watch the games, you can see him out there making winning plays every goddamn day. He is a joy. He's a joy. I think he's for sure the second best prospect out there right now, which is what it sounded crazy to me last season. He did not look like he had this in him last season, which, you know, again, speaks to the fact that, yeah. It was scary,
yeah.
Like, but it speaks to the fact that things can change quickly in the NBA, and, I don't know, the intangibles really do matter.
No, for sure, absolutely. I mean, like, the point you said about him gaining 3 years of experience overnight, that, I 100% relate, like, agree with that. Like, he looks like a different player, man. Like, he came back in, like, I don't know what the hell he did in the summer, but he worked his ass off, you could tell.
He just stood under a waterfall like a karate fighter or something. I don't know. Yeah. Whatever he did, it worked.
Paid up, paid down. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's what he did. That's what he did. No, I mean, he's picking things up like a sponge. And last year, it legitimately looked like Tari Eason. Like, we're talking about Cam Whitmore being on Jalen's right now. It looked like Tari was on Jabari last year, right? Like, just, you know, chomping at the bit to take his spot. And this year, it just looks like, man, Jabari's earned, he solidified that spot. He's fortified that spot for himself. Good for him. He's playing. And this is, again, this is me. Like, I had a lot of doubts about this guy, right? I at one point was flirting with the idea of having Jaden Ivey in the draft above him, right? Like, I did not trust his self-creation ability. Really didn't. Like, I just thought this guy is like, oh, he's kind of stiff. Not very fluid with the ball in his hands. I mean, not fluid at all with the ball in his hands.
Yeah.
His hips are kind of weird. And, you know, I talked about the yoga thing. I don't. Maybe it's the yoga. Maybe yoga really is that effective. Kareem did it. Who knows? Maybe it works that like it works like yeah. that.
Kareem's a smart man.
Yeah, I mean, Jabari's a smart guy for doing it too. I mean, he's whatever he did. I can't give him enough flowers because I feel like I have to overcompensate for how negative I was about him last year. He looks really good.
He's earned it. I mean, and you say Tari coming for and the only Tari now, he's not stopped that chase though. While Jabari has like pulled out ahead of him, Tari Eason is still right there. He is coming for that long-term Rockets contract. That is what he's coming after, and I think he's going to get it in before too long. Is that he just looks like a great, invaluable do-it-all type player. Dylan Brooks might be on the Rockets long-term, but Tari is coming for Dylan Brooks as well.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, I don't think he's coming after Jabari anymore. I think he's coming after Mr. $20 million a year guy. Right? Like, I think that's what he's coming after right now. And he's going to force the Rockets to make some tough decisions. Like, here's the thing, man. You can only pay three of these guys. That's the reality of CBA. Yeah. That's the reality of CBA. I think Şengün, Jabari probably is your number two. Number three is up for grabs. That competition is fierce. You're talking Jalen, you're talking Cam, you're talking Amen, and you're talking Eason. One of those guys, in reality, is going to get the contract. And the other three are going to get traded. Right? In reality.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that is the tough part of the situation. Is that, like, you really want to have all these guys, right? But, like, you, at the absolute most, you could maybe talk one of them into like a relatively team friendly deal and keep four. Maybe. But that's like at the outside. Like at the bare minimum, two of them are out of here. And no matter how good if they all turn out to be like all-star talents, they're gonna be out of there faster, actually.
Yeah, I mean, like, and that's why we're having these conversations about Jalen and Cam, right? Like I know there's someone listening to that conversation back in the beginning of the episode, like, Solomon, why are you doing this? Why are you pitting two of our prospects against each other like that? Why can't you just enjoy having both of them? Here's the thing, man. You can't enjoy both of them. You can't. Not for very long. Right?
Yeah, because you gotta pay both of them. Right. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Like, you can enjoy them, but maybe on different teams. Yeah. that's the thing. Like, that's why you have to kind of compare these prospects. It's a great spot to be in. Don't get me wrong, right? Like, I 100% understand a Rockets fan just being like, this is just nice. I just want to enjoy this for 5 minutes. Like, can I just enjoy this for 5 minutes? Because the Rockets haven't been in this spot in 25 years, right? Even in the Harden era, they weren't like this. They didn't have prospects like this.
They didn't do a rebuild before the Harden era. Like, yeah. they didn't tank out since Yao Ming.
Yeah. You know, Clint Capella was their best prospect before this, right? Like, their best draft prospect. Like, that's how long it's been. So I get it if you just want to enjoy this, right? But we have to talk about it, right? Like, we have to talk about who they're going to pay, right? Because we know that's the conversation they're having, right?
Hey, behind closed doors. Maybe Tillman's building a $75 million training facility because he hopes maybe it'll make each of these guys knock off, like, $2 million off each of their contracts or something, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, and if they do, money well spent. Worth every penny if that happens.
Yeah. I mean, you got to make one of these guys like a CFO of Landry's or something. Like a really well-paid CFO to compensate for what they're not going to get at the NBA level if you're going to keep four or five of these guys, right? Like, I just don't think that's realistic. Like, that's kind of why we're talking, hey, you know, you pick three and make sure you pick the right ones. Make sure you pick, do not miss, right? Or like, you might be able to miss, right? Do not miss badly enough to where you really regret it.
Yeah.
It really bites you.
Yeah, you don't want to see one of these guys go off somewhere else and become an all-star level player. Unless they all do. If all six of them do that, then you're like, well, okay. There's no way we could have kept all six and, you know, we viewed it fine. But you definitely don't want to see the ones who leave doing better than the ones who stay.
Can I say this about Jalen? I am now at the point with Jalen where, like, I kind of think him being a shooting guard isn't, like, for this team, isn't realistic. I think his path forward is he has to be a point guard. And he is so far behind. Like, I just think, in today's NBA, you cannot be a defensive liability at an off-guard position. You have to have the ball in your hands if you're going to be a defensive liability, and you have to be a great shooter. So the guy needs to get a lot better at three-point shooting and ball handling really quickly if he's going to stay around. Because I don't think Cam's going to be a defensive liability long-term. I think he's going to be fine. Like, I think defensively, as a prospect, I've always been a fan of what he could possibly bring.
Well, Jalen, introverts play defense. I don't know if that's true. I'm just saying things.
We could talk about this. Like, NBA GMs passed on this dude because he had a bad interview with him. Because he didn't talk. Because he wasn't
allegedly
bright. Yeah.
Allegedly, there was also injury concern wrapped up in there.
I don't buy it. I don't buy it.
Asterisk.
I don't buy it, Forrest. Yeah. I don't. You're letting them off the hook. You're letting these dumb GMs off the hook. I don't buy it. I legitimately think he went into these facilities, had bad interviews, and these guys were like leaking to the. Oh yeah, no, it was 100% the knee. The knee was like really worried us. Like, no, I think that like some of these the GMs think really like that. Dumb, that base level. Like, I have They're to like, talk to the... Yeah, I have to talk to the man. I have to get to know the man before I buy into the prospect. Like, they don't pay attention to any of the basketball. The interview is like A, B, and C for them. And then they knock him off their board if he doesn't have a killer interview.
And I think there's a lot of, especially among, like, all right, the kind of guys who succeed in business and sports front offices and things tend to have a certain idea about how they want people to act. They want real, like, type A type guys, right?
That's what I mean.
And
yeah.
Sure, yeah, right. And, like, sure, I guess those type of guys are really intense, but, like, you can be awkward or introverted and still be extremely competitive and extremely good at what you do. But, I mean, I guess they're going... Hopefully, they find out the hard way that you should not judge a person by whether they're loud enough in an interview or whatever.
It's so dumb. It's so dumb. Like these guys watch The Last Dance and think, I'm gonna draft my guy. I'm gonna draft my guy. It's like no, like that's not how this works, right? This is not a TV show, right? Like this you have to watch the games. Right, you can't just, like, yes, it's nice to have a men or an Asur Thompson, but if an Asur Thompson doesn't fit into your core, maybe draft the guy who can shoot the goddamn basketball. Right? Like,
did people just miss, like, 20 years of Tim Duncan?
I couldn't tell you.
Like, did they miss, like, Kawhi Leonard? Like, there are guys who are, like, more introverted
Harden.
And less...
Yeah.
Hard. Yeah, like... Oh, I guess though the current wisdom on Harden is that he was always bad or something.
Right.
But no, he obviously this is like an incredible player. You don't have to be outgoing to be an incredible basketball player. It's very obvious. I mean, I understand that there's like a correlation between being like gregarious and like having a big personality and like being competitive and stuff. I understand there's probably some correlation there, but that's just like a trend. You know, it's like, yeah, oftentimes competitive guys are going to be like loud or whatever, but that's not something you base draft picks on. That's yeah. Nothing.
Like go draft DeAndre Jordan 7th overall, man. if that's really how you feel. Right? Like go draft like the most like type A gregarious guy in the room. If that's really how you feel, just don't even watch the games, man. Just have this f-ing interview. Have mean hey. So much.
Hey, Blake Griffin dunked over a car. I need a stand-up comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, listen, I love, like, yes, there's something to, like, sitting down with a guy and getting to know, you know, what makes them click, right? What drives them, right? I get it. You can't, this isn't a movie, man. Like, you have to do the scouting. Do the hard scouting.
Hey, let me make a point, which is that, honestly, it might be better for him because maybe those guys, and probably those guys would have been bad fits for him.
Maybe.
You know, maybe he would have not been well off in an organization that values the kind of things that he just isn't, and he's better with a team who is willing to accept him for who he is.
He'd be so good on the Pistons right now. He'd be so good on the Pistons right now next to Cade.
Well, a lot of people would be good on the Pistons right now.
I had a conversation the other day. This is off topic. I had a conversation the other day about what I would do if I was the owner of that team. Like this is during the middle of the losing streak, right? I was like, what would I do? Like, would I show up to the games anymore? You know how they put T-shirts on, like, the chairs that people can wear before games? Like, during playoff mm-hmm. games, they do this a lot. I think I might place, like, brown paper bags on top of the chairs. So fans have to wear those. You had to see it on the TV. Like, instead of the nice, bright TV, like, T-shirts, they're wearing brown paper bags. Like, I wouldn't sell the team. I would negotiate against myself if someone tried to make me an offer, right? Like,
yeah, no, this is the lowest a team is going to be worth in a very long time. Don't sell a team, but you should lean into it. Like at this point, Pistons fans are like having a good time with how miserable it is. It's like funny for them how bad it is. Which, look, whomst among us, right? they're in like the gallows humor part of it, and yeah, honestly, the ownership should probably be leaning into the gallows humor part of it. They're not going to because these guys can never like admit anything like that. They can never like take anything on the chin. But
yeah, you can't be
having like brown paper bags and stuff would be like I don't know. I mean, my only concern would be like how do the players feel about it? Because like honestly, the main thing is just to keep these players from
Win a fucking game. All right, win a game.
Yeah.
like, I don't care. Okay, you're getting paid millions of dollars. You can have fans in the stands wear paper bags until you win a game. All right? Like, I at that point, like, what can you say? What can you realistically say to fight back? Like, honestly. Like, it was so bad. Like, it got to the point where I was really stressing that the Pistons were going to come in here with that losing streak and the Rockets were gonna was fist bumping when the Raptors finally lost, I was very happy. I was like, I do not want to be that team. I don't
the Pistons are just gonna get more they were just gonna get more dangerous with every loss until eventually Soames is gonna like be caught in the crossfire. And it was thankfully for the Rockets it was the Raptors, because then the Pistons came through and were like regular. They were not as hyped up and they got beaten pretty badly, worse than the score said. The score tightened up a lot on that game because it was like 35 or something for half the game. Anyway, not a good team.
No,
surprisingly not a good team. Do you mind if I get a little petty for a second here?
Go ahead.
Oh, there was so you might recall that people always do their over under predictions before every season. You may know this thing that everyone in sports coverage does. The common wisdom on the Rockets was like, 9 games more is a lot of games. I don't know if you can really take that over. I think you got to be safe and take the under. And all the self-same people being like, well, the Pistons only won 17, and they're slated to win like 10 more games, but it seems like 10 games is a pretty reasonable improvement for them. A lot of people took the under on Houston and the over on Detroit, and I'm not going to name any names, but I'm glad... I'm having more fun with this outcome than the other one.
Yeah. But, I mean, I look at that Monty Williams contract from this summer, and I'm like, what are the moves? Right? Like what that's where I'm like, you know, I feel really bad. It's like there's not an obvious pivot here. Like, what are you going to make a panic trade at the deadline? Like, no, you can't. You're a rebuilding team. You have to kind of eat this.
You just eat it. You just like have another high draft pick and hope for the best.
Yeah, I mean,
but who would have thought? Hey, like a year ago, who would have thought that we would be talking about the Rockets and be like, "Woo, it's so great that you know they're not a different team."
Yeah, listen, like the Rockets got their ass kicked out of them for the past 2 years. I think it's okay to kind of have
They were like 3 wins away last season from being the first team in NBA history to be the worst team 3 years in a row. They were very nearly like an all historic bad team.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I think it's okay for us to have a little bit of fun. I mean, and here's the thing. It's balls going into hoops. Like we're allowed to do whatever the hell we want. But going back to the Pistons really quickly, if I was one of those teams, if I'm about to play the Pistons, and they're on that massive losing streak, I'm putting on like 90s rap in the locker room. Like, I'm making sure my players are like having the best training, like pregame warmups, the best, like whatever they need. Like, we are not losing that game. We are not losing that game. I'm making them run up hills before, like whatever the hell to get them going, like get their juices going. I'm not losing that fucking game. Because
we're going to win by 40 or you're going to do suicides. Yeah.
The thought of losing to that team while they're losing like that, it's not so much that team is that bad. It's just the fact that you don't want to get in the record books, man. You don't.
Yeah, you don't want to be those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I just had to throw that in because it was on my mind. I was like, I don't know what I would do if I was an opposing coach. I would really get my team up for that game. Like, you cannot... That'd be the longest film session in the history of film sessions. We're not losing.
Coach, why are we studying this team so much?
Yeah.
No, we have to beat them. You don't get it.
Yeah. They were. Yeah. 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 I mean, you have to go all out for that game. But anyways, this was fun. It's fun. It's fun talking about Rockets basketball when things are going so well. When things are
we're back.
We're not at the bottom anymore. We're not at the bottom anymore. You know? For the time being.
Decent.
Yeah. Decent. Yeah. Play-in tournament. Let's go, baby. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and Stitcher. Forrest, where can the people follow you on Twitter?
At Dunots, D-U-N-O-T-S. Hit me up immediately. I need to get 2,000 followers more. I don't have a reason. I'm just trying to stump for myself.
Hey, follow Forrest on Twitter. He's a great follow. Very dark, and I like that. follow the podcast on Twitter at Red Nation Noobs. Go on rednationnoobs.com. Subscribe to the newsletter. The podcast on YouTube. Give it a thumbs up. And yeah, guys, have a good night.